Hello, welcome to the 30th episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rao.
I am Dan Mecca.
And today we are going to review Grown Ups and Night and Day.
All right, start off, dude. What do we got going on news-wise? Right,
let's start with news. So, it was announced last week that Cameron Crowe's next film, Elizabeth Town was his last film, and now he's going to be back. Hopefully, they have a tentative release date for December 2011 for We Bought a Zoo, and it was announced that Matt Damon is going to star.
Yeah, no, and I'm actually really excited about this news because I am a very big fan of Cameron Crowe. Have been a fan of actually all of his movies, including Elizabeth Town. I can concede that it is a poor movie in a lot of ways, and it's, you know, very much just poorly made and just sloppy. But I don't know, just like all of his movies, there's a certain amount of truth that you can't really find in a lot of movies of that genre, like romantic comedy, you know, kind of a thing. And it just seems like he writes with an honesty that most people really can't get into, tap into. So anything by him is just really kind of nice to see, especially because he doesn't make a lot of movies. And also, Matt Damon, it just seems like it's kind of branching out and trying to do new things, and that's just nice to see, because after the Bourne trilogy and after Green Zone and after just a lot of just, you know, really impressive but, you know, one note characters, you know, you know Damon's a really good actor, so it's just nice he's doing the Adjustment Bureau, which is a sci-fi romance. And, you know, obviously he hasn't really done romance since Legend of Bagger Vance and All the Pretty Horses, and he didn't do it that well back then, so hopefully 10 years has helped and he'll, you know, fit better into that kind of role. And then with We Bought a Zoo, he's playing a widowed father who, you know, kind of takes over a zoo in an attempt to essentially kind of give his kids a childhood, even, you know, and, you know, make them enjoy life, you know, even though their mother is gone, I guess. So that's something that, you know, you'd see Tom Hanks or one of those kind of more genial actors play. It excites me that he's doing new things.
Yeah, I've enjoyed. I mean, the last Vanilla Sky. I haven't seen Elizabeth Town,
but right, Cameron Crowe, Vanilla Sky, '01,
Almost Famous. I really enjoyed
Vanilla Sky. Vanilla Sky was like one of his. That's like his strange entry. Totally different from totally every different. Like. It's like it's literally like Jerry Maguire, you know, or Say Anything, just on crack, you know, because I mean it's about romance and relationships, but it's like just angle. Off in another fucking direction. But I love it. I love that movie.
Yeah, and Matt Damon, he has Hereafter, and
you're right, Hereafter. Totally forgot about that.
So
right,
hopefully, at least Eastwood can come back a little after.
Oh my God, Invictus is right. Invictus, Eastwood, and Damon. See, like Damon, yeah, that's more of a, you know, I guess, yeah. I mean, Invictus, you know, Invictus is like one of those roles where I wasn't surprised to see Damon playing, but I remember like watching that movie, this like the one scene with his wife or whatever, it almost makes you think like, you know, what would the movie have been like if it was more about Damon and his relationship? And I feel like he maybe wondered that himself.
Yeah.
And he's kind of going in and doing these other movies. And Hereafter is what, a thriller now?
Yeah, it's like a...
Which excites me, because that's something Clint Eastwood really hasn't done.
Yeah, and True Grit.
True Grit. I mean, that's classic. Self-explanatory. I mean, that's, yeah, speaks for itself. But,
So I'm
excited. And hopefully, I mean, Cameron Crowe's been having trouble getting movies out there or getting them in production, because he's got that Marvin Gaye thing. Didn't really ever happen. There's a Pearl Jam documentary somewhere. I don't know where that is, but that's nowhere to be found right now. No. So, I mean, it just kind of seems like since Elizabeth Town, kind of rightfully so, I guess, he's been having some trouble. So hopefully this will put him back up there.
Yeah. All right.
Director news.
Yeah, more director news. Spike Lee. Now we saw his...
Another guy who's kind of needs to step up.
After America Got Santa Ana.
We saw the premiere, at Toronto. Oof.
Yeah. But I did love his, too. I mean, Inside Man,
I like Inside Man.
And 25th Hour, his like last two have been.
Is that fantastic. Was 25th Hour his last? I mean, those are his last features. He did, you know, When the Levees Broke, and a lot of really good TV stuff. But
But now he's attached to Nagasaki Deadline. It's going to be produced actually by James Cameron and John Landau.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow, that's
Yeah,
amazing.
and it's a thriller, so we're kind of back in the Inside Man vein, I guess, in
Yeah,
terms
no, I
of
mean, hey.
blockbuster, more blockbuster-esque.
Yeah.
It says the plot is an FBI agent will be in a race against time to stop two potential terrorist acts that will take place on U.S. soil.
I mean,
So,
I hope it's better than that.
yeah, I know.
I hope there's more to it than
I mean,
that.
yeah, because I mean, when if you think of Inside Man, if you just think of bank heist, you did a lot with
Well,
that.
yeah.
So,
Well, no. I mean, I
I'm
think
hoping it's a similar
exactly.
thing.
I think Inside Man. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I mean, it works. I mean, I watched it more than once. I can go back to it, and I just think.
Yeah, but then I mean, then he tried to do a war film, and he didn't really elevate that
Well, no,
higher, which is
but he did. He kind of tried to do the same thing, I guess, with the war film. But I mean, I don't know. I just feel like. Inside Man, as it wasn't a huge budget. I mean, what did it cost? What, somewhere in the mid range,
yeah.
40, 50 something. It wasn't, I mean, Miracle at St. Anna, for however much it cost, and I know it didn't cost any more, probably even a little less than that, was an epic scale kind of a project. And I mean, Spike Lee, his epic is Malcolm X, which I mean, he is very much up his alley. But I mean, Miracle at St. Anna was just very, very one note. There was a lot of things going on. Like, he literally just put way too much on his plate that had never done before. I mean, it shows when you watch that movie. I mean, the casting's bad, the dialogue's poor, the editing's not right. I mean, he's clearly like rushed it out. There's just a
Yeah.
lot of things going on. So I mean, it might even help him to go back to something more formulaic, because clearly, like you said, he did something really, really good with Inside
Yeah,
Man.
I mean, Martin Campbell was attached to before at Fox, and they Fox dropped it. So due to
I
subject matter, it says. So I
Well,
don't know. But
Tom Rothman, I'm sure, had something to do with
yeah.
that, just because of the, he's notoriously, hates R ratings and,
Oh yeah.
what have you. And we can
Yeah.
get more into that when we review 9 Day,
Yes.
but yeah. So it's good though. Hey, it's nice to see Spike doing anything. He's one of my favorite directors. So.
Yes. Well, yeah, let's move on. Next story, another director, M. Night Shyamalan.
No.
He's back.
I mean, this is literally like the day where we're gonna go through all the once great directors and like their comeback projects,
I know.
and only one of them really sounds that intriguing.
Yes. So M. Night Shyamalan, I mean, he did The Happening, which was just
So just like
atrocious.
literally shitting on the face of God.
But thankfully, he decided to change it up, and we'll see how that turns out this week with the Last Airbender.
Right, of course, the Last Airbender.
But now he has another project. First, it was like a secret project that got announced, and now kind of the plot leaked out a little. But Bradley Cooper, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Bruce Willis are attached. Who's that? M. Night Shyamalan fave. So hopefully, he can,
Bruce,
Bruce
yeah.
Willis.
Big Bruce.
But the plot is Cooper would play a father on a desperate search for his missing child, and then this reports that it might strain a taking terrain. When the father taps into supernatural
Oh,
powers.
God.
So I don't know, I
So
mean.
take, so take, well, I mean, like a lot of the headlines, taken with supernatural power.
Yeah. I
So.
mean, could it be Unbreakable? I guess it's going to be an Unbreakable thing,
Well,
because
I
Bruce
mean,
Willis
didn't
would.
I, did I write the story? Because I
Yeah,
think I put,
you did,
like,
yeah.
it's essentially an extension of the ending of Unbreakable, because if I'm
Yeah.
not wrong, isn't the ending of Unbreakable he like has to find a kid or something, and then like he
I
falls
wasn't
into the
very into
water and
that
it's the
movie,
whole
but I
thing. But I
believe
mean
you.
that movie's
Yeah.
about spoilers for Unbreakable. That movie's about Bruce Willis is a superhero, and I mean so then at the end it's all about how he has to overcome the superhero weakness, his kryptonite, if you will. So I mean I guess I would say, and I did say I think in the article that. If there was a movie for him to tap back into, I mean, have
Well,
it be
he
Unbreakable or Sixth Sense,
always
because
talked
those
about
were
a
his.
sequel, The Unbreakable, but
Right, I
never,
mean,
I mean,
and once again, pure speculation, because I mean, this could totally be really not taken with superpowers, but I mean,
yeah.
from what we've heard. But hey, a good cast, Bradley Cooper, he's been trying to, I think, up his pedigree a little bit. He's got, the Dark Fields and, hopefully the Gray, so a little bit, just like higher class projects coming out, and then, And then obviously Bruce Willis and Gwyneth Paltrow both do good work when they try. So speaking of which, I don't know if you saw this, Jordan, but Surrogates is on Netflix Watch instantly.
Oh, it is. Well, we
So if
will have
anyone
to
has a
rewatch.
Netflix account, feel free to skip right past
Just
Surrogates and
say not interested on the button.
play something else.
Yes. Oh.
But yeah, I thought that was just interesting because that movie was out in theaters 7 months
It must
ago.
be desperate for people to watch it. I believe.
Emma.
All right.
But anyway.
Anyway, let's move on to our last news story.
And let's and this is mourning the
Fitting.
loss of a once great star, it would
Yeah.
appear.
I mean, we saw Night and Day
We did.
debut this weekend, and it not too strong.
I mean, not it wasn't you know it didn't burn. It wasn't, you know, I mean,
a bomb.
You know, I think the Wednesday release was a nice little thing, and it made $20 million in the weekend, so 28 altogether. You know,
yeah.
So that's not the worst thing in the world, but I mean, once again, the star wasn't Jay Baruchel; it was there's Tom Cruise, and so you know, once again, you know, was it 15 years ago? That would have been, inflation-wise, if you add inflation, that would have been atrocious. So,
yeah.
And then this is directly related. This news is directly
related.
So
Deadline is reporting now they planned a Mission Impossible 4 was going to be released Memorial Day, but then they just pushed it back to December a few weeks ago.
Brad Bird is supposed to direct it.
Yes, incredible Brad Bird.
The incredible Iron Giant Brad Bird.
Yes, and now Deadline is reporting that Paramount's kind of worried about Mission Impossible 4, and they said they might even rework the script, which I don't think it's complete yet, but might rework the script to feature a younger protege. So kind
of
like
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, I was gonna
style.
Say style. Yeah. So, I don't know.
I mean, I hope they don't do the protege thing, just because. I mean, would that fit in Mission Impossible?
I mean, what would hurt the most would be if Brad Bird took this on, because I mean, before I'm sure he saw what the script was and liked it, and then Paramount was like, "Oh wait, let's just change it last minute," but you know, still direct it, and then it turns out to be.
I just don't like, you know, it's sad enough that Joe Carnahan, you know, lost 2 years or 18 months of his days prepping MI3 just to see it go into the hands of J.J. Abrams, and I mean, while we both love Mission Impossible 3, the point is Joe Carnahan has a talent as a director. I mean, those are 2 years you're not going to get back. So for someone like Brad Bird, who is immensely, from what we've seen, even more talented than someone like Joe Carnahan, just from what he's given us.
Yeah.
It would just be a shame to see MI4 kind of not. I mean, I would rather them just cancel it than have it be a thing like the last time where we're not getting MI4 until 2014, and Bird's going to drop out in a year, and then you know you're going to have to. You know, J. Abrams will jump back on. It's so crazy. You know what I mean? And so the protege thing, I don't think it would work with MI, you know, Mission Impossible. Because, I mean, you know, look, if you look at the Mission Impossible franchise, it is Tom Cruise.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, literally, you know, it's the show, and then it's the movies, and it's Cruise.
It's not like
and,
Bond. It's not, you know.
You know, Bond, I don't know, Bond, there's a little more leeway just because there's so much history. But, I mean, you know, there's only been three movies with Mission Impossible. And I just think...
I don't know, but I mean, this news story came out before.
The trilogy's good by its own, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, the news story came out before, so we'll have to see before Night and Day, and now they saw the Night and Day.
But I mean, the reason we said it was related is because the rumor was if Night and Day didn't open, you know, didn't perform, then MI4 was in jeopardy. And I just can't imagine that Night and Day performed in anyone's eyes. I mean, it, like I said, it wasn't a bomb, but it definitely, you know, tripped out of the gate, so.
Yeah.
Well, it, you know, and we'll review it. I mean, hopefully word of mouth helps the film, you know.
Yeah. I assume they'll have to get started soon, so we'll know pretty soon whether they're going to cancel or...
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'd imagine, you know, in the next few weeks we'd hear about it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, who would you like to see play a younger MI4?
A younger MIG... Shia LaBeouf available?
Why not?
Can we have him be... Like, we can be... like an Easy Rider from, you know, or the Wild One, rather.
They can just take the people that didn't get into X-Men First Class and Spider-Man.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. And they can actually create just a small IMF little team.
Yeah.
It'd be, you know, IMF First Class.
Yeah.
And Ethan Hawke will get paralyzed at the beginning of Mission Impossible 4. He'll be in a wheelchair. But through the accident, he'll have powers, the ability to see the future, like Professor Xavier.
They really should just mix a class of...
Michael Fassbender can play the evil, you know, the evil friend, or the friend who becomes evil, you know, like Magneto, and there can be a Holocaust backstory. And I mean, I see a franchise, ripe for production.
All
right. The script practically writes itself.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get into reviews.
Speaking of scripts that write themselves.
Oh my God. Yes.
From what I've heard.
Yeah. So I saw, I endured, Grown-Ups.
I did not.
Dan was the better man.
A blessing from his holiest, apparently.
Now this is Dennis Dugan. Latest
the,
film.
The
and a Dennis
author.
Dugan joint. And written by
a Dennis Wolf. Dugan picture.
Oh yes, a Dennis Dugan figure. And this is I don't know if it was written because the whole film felt like they just said whatever they thought the whole time, and so I don't know.
Pure improv.
Yeah, so I guess.
Pure improv.
I mean, this is a script written by Adam Sandler and Fred Wolf, so maybe Fred Wolf kind of came up with the general.
Maybe Fred was on set. Maybe it was like Adam Sandler would say something, and Fred would be like, "I like it, Adam."
Yeah, just keep going.
Like, all right, Fred, I'll give you a co-writer credit on it.
Yeah, so this is in the Dennis Dugan trilogy of.
No, the great trilogy of. You Don't Mess with Zoyana, Not for Nature, Chuck and Larry, and Grown Ups.
Yeah, and the Benchwarmers was kind of a precursor to...
Well, that's... I mean, I think that's really more of a concept piece.
All right.
You know, more of a... but...
No, but I mean, he was kind of a once great comedy director, I have to say. I mean, I love... No, okay, not great, but Happy Gilmore, Big Daddy are both looked upon very highly.
I mean, I think what... what you're really looking for is he was once involved in far greater Adam Sandler projects, and he was sitting in the same chair, just the movies were funny. Or maybe we were younger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, and I even liked Sammy Silverman quite a lot.
No, yeah, and that's true. He did do that, and there was no Adam Sandler, and Adam Sandler was not involved in that.
Yeah. So this is the latest film from him, and it has a five leads.
Five credible comedians.
Yes, Kevin James, Rob Schneider, David Spade, Chris Rock, and Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't fail.
A chemic combination like that, literally,
it's kind
the
of,
only the only answer to that equation is brilliance.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of like the Expendables later this year, I feel like that. There's
kind of like when Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor made that movie together, arguably two greatest comedians of all time. They made Harlem Nights. That worked out really well. Oh, you know it didn't. I'm sorry. All right.
And
the Expendables, like you said, of course.
Oh, God. So basically, the story starts out with them. I'll give you a little, because it is complex. It's like,
I know,
it's
I've
this
heard,
year's
I've
Inception.
Heard it's very, very just integrated.
Yeah.
It's a lot of...
Now, these it starts out with these kids in high school, and their coach dies. And, they have a tournament. They win. Flash forward 30 years later, their coach dies.
Okay,
they get
you,
together.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's so complex.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
And they get together in this cabin.
Mm-hmm. For the coach's funeral.
Yep. And then
after
there's
the,
about
after
an
the
hour and a half. Yep, there's about an hour and a half fart jokes and gags, and then the movie ends.
That sounds. Wait, can you repeat that again? Because I'm not following you. Are you saying that the dream is real?
The dream is real in this movie.
Okay.
And
okay. The nightmare is real.
Yeah, I know. Almost every aspect of this movie is just atrocious. Just like
what about the camera work? Like, tell me a little bit about.
There's
that.
It almost feels just like everything's so calculated. Like even like the transitions, like there'll be like, you know, like a nice like jib up of like
right,
like,
of course.
Like something, and like in every scene that's how it starts. Like it's just and they go on a joke, and like I can't.
Jeez.
There's not one scene like there's a scene in the film where they go to a water park, as you can see in the poster, the atrocious poster.
Whoa! Someone worked hard for like 15 minutes on Photoshop on that, right? Don't hate on posters.
Like, you would think there might be some sense of just any type of, like, maybe a cool shot of them, like, the cameras inside, you know, like, going down the tube or something. Like,
yeah.
But no, there's nothing like that. And,
Well, they already spent $100 million hiring those five comedians.
Yeah, and
so,
like, you would think, like, I mean, there's a basketball game that filmed terribly. I mean, I just don't know. There's not anything. So in terms of that aspect. So let's just say for a comedy, let's see if it works.
Let's forget about comedy. Let's forget about comedy because there's a lot of different comedies, right? Obviously,
yeah.
This isn't an Apatow comedy or whatever. As an Adam Sandler comedy, okay, you know, this is Adam Sandler in movie star mode. This isn't Funny People,
right,
Rain
right.
Over Me, Spanglish. Okay, I think that's the well right there that we just named those four movies.
Yes.
So it's not any of those movies. So it has to be any of the other movies. So. In lieu of those other movies, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Big Daddy, the greats, the trifecta. Okay, then, you know, Anger Management's pretty funny, right? There's a couple others I'm forgetting. Little Nicky, literally, I think the devil made that film.
I've
one of the worst movies ever made. You know, You Don't Mess with Zohan's not great. Where does it stand in the Sandler canon of gross out, potty mouth comedies?
At the absolute bottom.
Okay.
I know.
Okay.
I've seen how now pronounce a Chuck and Larry. I don't remember as that. But
I do remember. I mean, I did not. I totally disliked the way that movie ended and how it was made. But I do remember laughing at points.
There's just like this strong sense throughout the entire movie that no one gives a shit about anything.
Apparently, Chris Rock, from what I've heard, not just from you but from other people, cares the least.
Oh, dude, his opening scene. It's just like. It's just depressing. Because, I mean, we saw Good Hair. You could tell he really tried with that.
Dude,
he was
I
really,
love,
he was,
loved Good Hair.
He was
really,
really
really loved Good Hair.
And, yeah, but then, and then this movie, there's just, there's nothing. There's literally the opening.
Wait, how does it compare to his performance in Death at a Funeral?
Seriously. Oh, yeah. No, because I thought that was, they did, it was in a solid remake, like, in terms of doing the same thing
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
And they just did it again, and yeah. it worked. But in this movie, I guess they tried to do the Billy Madison stuff again. It just didn't work.
Yikes.
And, yeah, even, I mean, the supporting cast, Salma Hayek.
Salma Hayek. Maria
totally
Bello.
Kind of out of place.
Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. Just everyone just does, like, you just
all
tell.
Good actresses.
I know. It's just sad. It's just no one, yeah. Nothing there. Then just we get a cameo from Steve Buscemi.
Do we?
That,
that's surprising.
Spoiler,
that we
sorry.
Get a Buscemi
and,
cameo.
No, just, it's just cringeworthy, the whole thing, the whole ordeal.
Mm.
I mean,
is there a funny scene? Is there anything?
Yeah, there,
anything worth
one,
going to the movie theater for?
Nothing worth going to the movie for, but there is a funny.
If it's streaming on Hulu in 2 years,
yes,
is there
there's a funny gag in terms of Adam Sandler's this big Hollywood agent, and he has a nanny,
mm.
and so when he goes back, you know, to meet his friends, he doesn't want to seem like he's a big Hollywood agent, so he pretends that she's an exchange student,
mm.
and so she's always telling her like she's bringing him like food and coffee and stuff, and he's telling her, oh no, thank you, but you can drink, like go study your books and stuff, and I mean like every joke in there, it gets just pounded into the ground by the end of the movie. Like there's not a single joke that they just let go. Like every joke, every like big gag, they repeat, and it's just a. And I mean, and then the jokes in between, the one like
isn't that just what comedy is? Repetition until just complete submission
no.
by the audience.
I guess.
No, oh yeah,
well,
okay,
Dennis Dugan style.
Dennis Dugan, okay.
And I mean, if you want like just a taste of the movie, watch like the first 5 minutes when they all get together. Literally, there's no sense of like this great like reuniting and stuff. It's just one liners. Like they just go around in a circle and say one liners to each other for 5 minutes.
That just sounds literally painful.
And then they like a fake close up of Adam Sandler laughing and then Kevin James laughing, like you can just tell like this whole movie just reeks of just not giving a shit. And in return, we just get a huge piece of shit. That's all you can say.
It's a huge piece of shit. A huge piece of shit that grossed $41 million this weekend, which was $20 million more than.
Yes, Night and Day. Let's just get on to Night and Day. Yeah, never ever see Grown Ups, no matter what. I can't even think of a way. Like, even if you like the first 4 days.
So even if it's streaming on Hulu in 2 years.
Yeah.
No. Just don't watch. Watch The Age of Innocence.
Literally anything. And, yeah, I couldn't recommend this in any capacity to anyone.
Wow.
Yeah. Except my audience absolutely loved it. So, and it seems like a lot of audience did.
Oh,
so,
God. Just.
This is just one where the critics, I guess, don't see eye to eye.
Just one. One of the many, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know if that.
All right, well, let's move on to a much, 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 much better film.
Much better film. Very solid film.
Yes. Night and Day. Now that we talked about this
Night
before, Cruise's kind of return after Valkyrie. Well, he did the Tropic Thunder cameo.
This is his first summer blockbuster since 2006 when Mission Impossible 3 came out and subsequently underperformed slightly. Though I think it has had a very nice kind of afterlife. I think people kind of see that film for what it is and all that. But I mean, if you remember, that was literally, that movie came out right in the midst of just all that, just fucking Tom Cruise's crazy shit.
Yeah.
But still grossed like $47 million its opening week, and this film grossed, 20 or so.
Yeah.
So, say what you will. You know, there's a lot of things being written about as poorly marketed and stuff. And I can understand why. I mean, the poster was really cool, but you don't see Tom Cruise's face, you don't see Cameron Diaz's face.
Well, one of the things was it just kind of started too late. Like, they just didn't.
It literally almost seems like they were, like, stutter stepping until the very end, and they panicked, and then it came out, and they're like, But, I mean, if you actually went to go see it, or if you plan to go see it, you'll find that all the marketing and Tom Cruise bashing and Cameron Diaz bashing aside, it's actually just a very fun action comedy caper in the vein of Charade, in the vein of North by Northwest. I mean, certainly not maybe as pitch perfect, as tonally perfect as a North by Northwest, but I mean, but the chemistry between Diaz and Cruz is there. The comedy solid. Cruz is very, very funny. I mean, clearly he's trying to literally loosen up his appeal, loosen up his, I guess, just demeanor in general, because you have the Tropic Thunder and the Last Grossman movie maybe might be getting made, and the Hardy Men movie with Ben Stiller is still a possibility, yeah. And then This Night and Day. So literally, he's like making comedies now. So and he's good at it. So yeah. I he carries the movie with his comedy. James Mangold's directing, who's a very solid director. He did 310 to Yuma, Identity, Walk the Line, which I actually am I'm not a fan of it. And but still, he's a solid director. And yeah, I think this is a departure for him and a good one. I think he does a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The first hour of this movie is just, I mean, perfect.
Almost. Yes, yeah. Like, I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I kind of read Jack's review, our site, and like the last third.
Yeah, it definitely wanes, totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, because it becomes, I mean, you have to finish it.
You just got
to
wrap it up.
Yeah, you know, you have to finish it, and so you have to, you know, with a movie like this, I don't think there's any real way that you can finish it without reminding people of other maybe more successful movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they tried. I mean, the ending was kind of creatively lackadaisical, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and without really spoiling too much, because 5 minutes into this movie, you'll realize that really the whole movie is a punchline. It ends on a punchline. The climax, at least, ends on a punchline. So it's kind of funny. Also, a little off-putting just because, you know, it just seems like there was never much to lose in the first place or you know, whatever you want to say. But, I mean, but yeah, the first hour is just solid. I mean, the meet cute between Cruz's character, Roy Miller, who actually has the same name as Matt Damon's character from Green Zone, you pointed that out, and Cameron Diaz's character is nice. I mean, just very charming. You know, they're two middle-aged movie stars who just seem very comfortable in their middle age. And it works because Cameron Diaz looks so much older than she did 16 years ago in The Mask, but it looks good on her. It looks good on her. And Tom Cruise, he looks weird. You know, he acts strange more than he ever has. But obviously, it almost seems it works for him because I think that's what people think of him as. I mean, I don't think he can play Jerry Maguire right now.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think he knows he can't play, Joel Goodson from Risky Business. He can't play Jerry Maguire. He can't play those roles anymore. Because people don't think of him like that.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really have... I mean, there's not really a serious moment with him in the film, really.
No, I mean, you know, he has his charms, and certainly, you know, he... I mean, at least for me, he won me over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's enough romance. I mean, there is a lot of romance in the movie. There's enough that you care about their relationship, you know, on a very purely blockbuster level. But yeah, he's always cracking jokes, you know, and I think it works. I think it works totally.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't... The one thing about the romance that I'll agree with some of the critics saying that, like, they didn't quite build up enough until, like, you didn't quite buy it. The end, I mean, there's a scene where Cameron Diaz, I mean, not big spoiler, she gets drugged or whatever, and she says, with
truth serum.
Yeah, and that's, like, the first moment where they kind of, you know, embrace each other.
I don't know. I kind of disagree because it's one of these things... I almost like it because it's almost like the director and the writer, whoever the filmmakers, they know that you're watching Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz on screen, so it's almost it's the same thing watching Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn in Charade. Yeah. I mean, the romance is quick, but you know it's going to be there because they're two movie stars in a movie about a romantic spy caper. So I guess if you look at it, they there's a lot of running and a lot of shooting and not quite enough.
Yeah, but even like I would
establishment.
No, I agree. Yeah, every scene I was kind of wait. Like if Tom Cruise wasn't in the scene, I was just waiting for him to kind of come back. And not that Diaz did a bad job, but if they kind of.
But yeah, for the first hour, she just pretty much reacts.
Yeah, and like so she's always running away. So I was always there's a scene in the beginning where like she literally runs away and like gets on a bus, and then Tom Cruise just comes out of nowhere, comes back, and I like love those moments where he kind of comes back and is like, all right, let's go, and every scene I was kind of waiting for him to come back and do it
and deliver the joke again.
Yeah, and so like. Not that I didn't like Diaz, but like if they kind of did a little better job building her character and building at least their relationship, I would have maybe cared a little bit more.
It would have been nice. What might have been nice would have been to like have the movie, because it's all about Cameron Diaz's young sister's getting married, mm-hmm. so that's just kind of like a deadline in the movie because it starts a week before the wedding. So Tom Cruise, his character, he plays this, it's like this abnormally nice guy spy. And so it's like, is he really nice? Is he not nice? Is he a corrupt agent? Or mm-hmm. is he actually the good guy? And it's a kind of, it's a nice twist on the whole mystery thing. Because he's not just like enigmatic charmer. He's an enigmatic charmer who's out of his mind, it seems like.
Yeah.
And so that's really the joke of the movie. But it almost would have been nice if the movie had started at the wedding and Tom Cruise was this kind of mysterious guest.
Yeah.
And they had this like nice meeting without any of the craziness. And then the craziness started after. And then they had to, you know, because then you're like establishing this romance before anything's starting. Yeah. And then you could have all the same jokes because he's not the guy you thought he was, kind of a thing. And then he's like, oh, wait, but he was the guy I thought he was. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I was actually surprised how quick they started. I mean, the movie starts in the airport with their meeting.
Yeah, the movie starts in the airport where, I mean, obviously, if you've seen the trailers, that's where the trailer starts. And and then literally from 5 minutes into the movie, it just gets real.
Yeah, and I really, I mean, a lot of action movies like this. I mean, I think MI3 had a great MacGuffin, and I think this one was actually
MI3 had a great MacGuffin. Yeah.
I mean, this one has to do with like a battery.
This was good. And yeah, I liked it. And the scene where Tom Cruise quote unquote explains the reason for the MacGuffin is one of actually the nicest scenes in the movie. In terms of anything, in terms of comedy, in terms of romance.
Yeah, just kind
of
slow it down.
That's one of the first scenes where you establish that there's some sort of feeling and attraction between the two characters. So, I mean, that was an example of what maybe the movie could have used a little bit more of, you know.
Yeah, especially towards the beginning. But, I mean, in terms of supporting cast, I like Peter Sarsgaard.
Sarsgaard plays the conflicting agent who's out to get Roy Miller, Tom Cruise, because Tom Cruise is bad. Or is he? Question mark.
Yeah.
And Paul Dano plays a boy wonder scientist who created the MacGuffin.
With a lot of facial hair.
With a lot of disgusting facial hair, which is awesome.
And then Viola Davis is in every role.
Viola Davis. I mean, hey, way to get that Oscar and then just play the explaining, educated.
She was the mayor.
Yeah. That was the exact same role.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, except in a much better movie. But it's like, you know, she is there literally to tell the main characters, this is what's happening and this can't happen.
Yeah.
And hey, I guess she's good at it because she's good at doing a lot more difficult things. So,
yes.
But,
and I always love when Celia Weston is in a movie, the mom. She's in every movie
Celia Weston plays the exact same character in every movie.
She's in the box, too.
That's right. Oh, my God. She is. But she's good, though.
Yeah.
She's good at that one quirky mom role
yeah.
that she's been doing for 20 years, God bless her. Someone should give that woman an Oscar for quirky mom performances. A lifetime achievement Oscar for just being consistent.
Yeah, and I even like solid character. I really like there. I mean, she plays it.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. She's in the movie, and she does a good job.
She does a very good job.
No, I mean, I don't know if we need to even get spoilers.
No, I don't even think we do. I'm saying I don't think it's worth it. I mean, because the movie has spoilers, has twists. The title, people might be wondering, what the hell's up with the title? It was originally called Troubleman,
Wichita,
apparently, according to Deadline Hollywood. but then it was Wichita for a while when it was in production. And then kind of last minute, not last minute, but you know, what, a few months ago, it got changed to Night and Day. And apparently that was Tom Rothman, the Fox execs decision. And there's a little in-joke to why it's called Night and Day. Night, of course, with a K. And not, you know, just the end. So there's an in-joke with that. And, some people I don't think like the in-joke. I actually thought it was cute and fine and perfect for a movie that plays at this speed. And I know some people didn't like the CGI. I guess, I mean, the CGI could have been better. But honestly, by the end of the movie, when it's really running, it's really coming hard, I really didn't care. I was having a good enough time.
Yeah, there's like a few action set pieces in like the first half that I think work great with it.
You know what I mean? And then at the end, it kind of gets a little much. There's bowls and shit.
But even that I didn't mind. But there's something at the very end that is really just stupid. There's an explosion. And, but I mean, whatever.
I think.
But in terms of action, I mean, I think there's a one highway scene that I think is great.
Especially, I mean, I'll say this: every action scene in this movie, I enjoyed over every action scene in the A-Team. Like, if you were to put all of them next to each other, I mean, there are some. I enjoy the A-Team. There are some scenes that definitely were impressive, but just the way that Mangold shoots, probably the fact that Tom Cruise does his own stunts helped.
Yeah. I mean, even the very first one in the airplane.
There were more wide shots.
Yeah,
you know, the thing about A-Team is you got just a, you know, like people have said, there's a lot of shaky cam stuff, a lot of just a confusion because the editing is just all over the place because I think it had to be. But with this, I mean, when Tom Cruise is running across a roof and jumping from literally a rooftop to a rooftop, you see him do it because the camera's wide, because he's doing it.
Yeah.
And that's impressive. It's just nice.
Yeah, you know, with the wide shots in A-Team, you could totally tell it was just very CG.
Exactly. And so with this one, you know, literally, you know, you see things happen that happened, you know, and that is nice because in this day and age, it doesn't happen that much. And I can guarantee you, hopefully there'll be plenty of that.
I listened to about an hour of interviews today.
We were both very excited. Jordan is to the point of literally obsession excited about it. But I'll say this. I mean, we've been talking about Inception because it seems to be like the last hope in a dying summer of tenfold failures, right? Night and Day met all my expectations, and I actually really can't wait to see it again. And I am saddened. I did not see Grown Ups, of course, but I'm saddened that in between the two most impressive summer blockbusters, Toy Story and Night and Day, sits, as you called it, a lump of shit like Grown Ups. You know, and it just kind of goes to show that something's wrong.
Yeah,
something's just wrong with the way things are being done, why people are seeing movies. I get escapism, but I mean, this Night and Day is the fucking perfect escapism movie. And you know, hey, maybe Fox should have marketed it like that. You know, maybe Fox should have put away some of the 18 marketing dollars, focused a little bit more on Night and Day, let Tom Cruise go on a couple of fucking Jay Leno, Good Morning America things, proving that he's not totally insane. And maybe the movie would have done better. But, you know, for how it stands, one day people look back and they'll realize that this is the closest to a fun Hitchcock movie we're going to get these days.
Yeah.
From a studio, at least.
Amen. So, amen, brother.
Yeah. That's what I have to say about
see
that.
See 9 Day.
See 9 Day. See or rent Charade.
Yeah.
But see 9 Day.
Well, let's wait. Charade's coming out on Blu-ray.
Just announced. So go see 9 Day and then go. And then go
actually, another great Blu-ray announcement. Amazing Blu-ray announcement. We're just going to do a little tangent right now.
Do hit it. Go.
Back to the Future trilogy comes out just October. Read that. And I then can't wait. Humphrey Bogart collection.
Oh,
Treasure Mother. Treasure of Sierra Madre and Maltese Falcon.
Is that what it is? It's like a little deal. Two solid
sweet
films.
Jesus. Beautiful.
Two solid
and Psycho, films. Speaking of Hitchcock.
I think both those films are John Huston, I believe.
Yeah.
And those are two of Bogey's best performances.
So, yeah. So, no, definitely Night and Day. It's a great date movie. Great. Maybe me and Dan just went.
Yeah.
And we had fun. And anyone can really enjoy it, I think.
I should find a date and take her to go see Night and Day.
Absolutely. But yeah, no, we'll be back hopefully next week. I don't know if we'll be back next week.
I'm headed back. But I mean, we'll
come back.
We will be back, no matter what.
Yeah, but next week we got Twilight, and does that release early? I think it does. And then yeah,
you mean like 7 p.m.?
No, I mean Wednesday.
Does it?
And then it definitely does. The 30th, Wednesday, and then we have two early releases, and then Last Airbender comes out Thursday.
So, does it really?
Yep, they just pushed.
Dude, Airbender versus the Twilight. Interesting. An interesting match.
People are predicting that Twilight could get the highest opening gross ever.
Oh, I mean, New Moon almost did.
I know.
You know what's funny, though? I know that I'm not the Twilight demographic, but everybody I talk to, be they my mom, be they my mom's friends, you know, 50-year-old women, you know, married, whatever, who you know, my mom likes Twilight, whatever. Other than my mom, though, like, and among her friends, and then, like, girls that are my age, girls that are a little bit younger, guys, whatever, I've talked to multiple people about Twilight, because there's a fascination to what, I have a fascination to the fascination that is Twilight. And no one likes it, apparently. My mom admitted that she likes it, and maybe that's because she's my mother and she's honest with me, but no one has admitted that they like it, and yet, every time one of them gets released, they make more money than like God can print in heaven, and I just must have not met any of these people, which I'm flabbergasted me because I've met a lot of people, and I just don't. I don't know. Someone should just write us an email. A Twilight fan, if you're out there, if you listen to us, you probably don't, but if you do, send us an email explaining who these people are and why these people are. So that's my dying request, literally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, are you planning? I mean, you have your midnight tickets or no?
I always buy 6 midnight tickets just in case 5 of my friends who don't like it want to go with
me. Well, no, I mean, if we can come back, we'll definitely do it. I'm going to see Last Airbender opening day, so we'll see.
I'll definitely get out there and see it. So.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, that's it for the Film Stage podcast this week. We'll be back hopefully next week. If not, you can always follow our updates on Twitter, twitter.com/thefilmstage.
Yeah. And just follow the Film Stage for all your news and, you know, features and anything film related.
Yep. All right, guys. Have a good one.